Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together. In the first hour, I'm going to spend with Del Stecker. Yeah, one of the highlights of my summer, truly, was the release of Boardwalk Blues, which is Del's latest novel. And if you go to Raleigh.net, R-O-L-L-Y-E.net, there is a link directly to Amazon where you can get a copy, and I think you're going to want to. So, Del, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. It's good to talk to you again.
Yes, likewise. You know, I knew you were from Chicago, not only because I was aware of it, but certainly from all your writings, where it was clearly that of an insider. But when I read Boardwalk Blues, I thought to myself, man, this sounds like somebody who grew up on the Jersey Shore. So, first question is, what was it that enticed you to write about the Jersey Shore?
I go to the Jersey Shore 2 or 3 times a year. My favorite place is Ocean City, which is right across the inlet from Atlantic City.
Right.
So I spend a lot of time in both places. And if you know anything about those two places, they're very, very different. Both have boardwalks, but in one community is community-oriented. No booze, no taverns, no nothing. And then you've got across 12 miles away, you've got gambling and vice and all of the, Steve Buscemi did a whole series on it, you know, Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, absolutely.
It was different as day and night. So I thought I was inspired by A Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah.
And I did A Tale of Two Boardwalks.
And you did, and it was great. Yeah, I was thinking when I was reading about Ocean City, Margate is probably closer to Ocean City in feel than it is Atlantic City. Atlantic City is really an island unto itself in many ways, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, ebbs and flows, but I think the commonality through the decades is that in some ways it has always had a seedy underside.
Yeah, and when you go there today, and I don't want to disparage Atlantic City because it's far nicer than it was 20, 30 years ago. There's a distinct difference between it and Ocean City.
Oh,
yeah. And I just thought, wouldn't that be a great background setting for, you know, A Tale of Crime and, you know, Hidden Identity, somebody like Jimmy, who is kind of burned out and wants to leave one and goes hide in the other. So, and then he's sucked back in.
He sure is. And of course, Jersey Shore Jimmy is a disc jockey, like you say, a burned out disc jockey, former disc jockey. And I had to laugh because there were so many people who I could have seen in that role. And I was wondering, did you pattern him after anybody?
No, I didn't want to face a lawsuit, you know.
Well, a lot of them are dead.
Yeah. I just, like most of my writing, I get an inspiration, and when a character is there, I just let them do their thing. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough that I have characters that take on a life of their own. And sometimes they actually, in the middle of the night, tell me what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. And I'm just, you know, the scribe just writing down the action. I didn't have anyone in particular in mind, But I'm glad you say that it's real enough that maybe a couple people could be.
Oh, yeah. No, there were definitely a few people I thought it might be an amalgamation of. So it was just terrific that way. And I don't want to give away the ending, but I think we're not going to hear more from Jersey Shore Jimmy. And I'm very upset about that. I feel like I've lost a friend.
Well, I wanted the story to move quickly, have up and downs, a lot of plot, a lot of characters.
Yeah.
And then the end just happened, and I was surprised too.
But, you know, it's interesting because there are a lot of plot twists. But again, I could see it all happening there. None of it was a surprise. It was just a terrific read. I loved it. And again, of course, when we last talked, we were talking about the South Side. And, of course, Chicago, your hometown, it comes naturally. But there had to be a lot of research into Boardwalk Blues.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time. I particularly wanted to flavor it with, and it's your, really your realm, music, the influence of music. There's you know, sometimes you put a line or two in there, and it may take a lot of research and thought. You know, I get a plug in there for Southside Johnny and,
yeah,
you know, people that are part of the music scene. And it really means a lot to me to be able to, you know, drop them in and do that kind of thing.
Yeah, but, it's great. I was going to say,
well,
you made Jimmy come alive in such a way. He was actually an album-oriented jock who normally I would never give a second thought to, but I liked him, you know what I mean? And I love the way he quit. So it's just a terrific, terrific book that way. So Boardwalk Blues, it's been out. I got my copy on August 1st, as far as that goes. How's it been doing? What are you hearing?
Oh, it's like every book that I look back on in my career. I'm a late-in-life writer, working mostly with small press. I've been fortunate to get great reviews on everything I write,
yeah.
But the sad fact is that the number of readers is not increasing, which means reading is going down because, you know, if it's a static number in a growing population, reading is just not as popular as it once was, and bookstores have disappeared.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And
so,
it was interesting you're saying that, because normally you'd think that bookstores disappeared because of distribution, because there's Amazon and there's things online and all that. But what you're saying is that readership is down. That's a horrifying figure to me, because to me, life wouldn't be worth living without reading. I mean, it's a very big part of my life, and I don't want a Kindle or anything like that. I want to read the printed page. And to think that this is becoming less popular by the day is truly horrifying.
Yeah, as a writer, I'm not saying this just because, you know, it's what I do, but in my lifetime, the importance of reading has gone down, the ability, comprehension levels, all of that is just going down, down, down. And, you know, if you say something about it, you know, I could be accused of being a grumpy old man, but facts are facts. My favorite anecdote about that is, and I'm not going to say the person, but there was a young person who said, when we're talking about books and reading, you go, oh, I've read a book once, you know, and I mean, seriously, and they were proud of that they'd read one book, and you know, I come from a time and place when you read a book a day. You know, I was addicted to reading young, and I'm with you. I can't see a world without them.
No.
And I, too, love, and I don't use Kindle. I'm happy if people buy my books on Kindle, but I like to touch and feel, and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just truly horrifying, because reading, a lot like radio, it involves so much theater of the mind that, you know, the writer sets the tone, but then the reader really embellishes it with what they see in the mind's eye. And like I say, it's just, I think it's stunning that that people don't want to do this anymore. And I instinctively know that you are right about that. And it's horrifying. It explains to some extent why we see some of the pablum we do in video or television, because the idea of developing a plot and carrying somebody through it that way, that seems to be less and less.
Yeah, I think from my point of view as a writer, I try to craft something that it's interesting, great characters, action, all that kind of stuff. But I hope that the person reading is engaged enough to start thinking along with me, and even outthinking me, and saying, you know, boy, I was surprised it went this way because I thought it was going to go that way.
Right.
You know, it's a mind game for minds that really work. You know, I can't imagine what it'd be like. I'm not a video person. I don't do video games, but I see these people have those visors on and they sit there and, you know, they're happy with stuff being shoved in their brain. And, you know, I think it's more fun to have in your brain, think things around and, you know, make things come out.
Yeah. Absolutely. We're talking to Del Stecher, and Boardwalk Blues is truly a delight. Again, I've got a link on Raleigh.net to Amazon, and it is absolutely worth it. We're going to talk about a number of other things, but one thing I had said to Del is I said, sure, pick your own bumpers. And we've got three this hour, and we'll play the first one in moments, and Del will tell us why he picked it on WGN Radio.
Inside of me for, oh, I don't know how long. I don't know why, but I keep thinking something's bound to go wrong. But he looks in my eyes and makes me realize when he says, don't worry, baby.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, a lot of royalty on that, of course, originally from the 1964 album the Beach Boys put out, and Beach Boys certainly doing the background vocals on that, and featured out front is Lori Morgan, who is somewhat of country royalty as far as that goes, certainly not only by her own hits, but by way of her father, George Morgan, who was the last guy to sing at the Ryman Orchestra, the Ryman Opry House before they moved to Opryland, and the first guy to sing at Opryland, and then he died shortly thereafter. All right, but we're talking to Del Stecher, who picked that out as his first bumper, and I got to ask, why?
Okay, do I get to make pretend I'm the DJ now?
Do anything you want.
Okay, I spent a lot of my adult life in Nashville. In the summer of 1996, I was involved very heavily in the effort to move the Country Music Hall of Fame from Music Row downtown to its present location.
Uh-huh.
That summer, the Beach Boys came into town, and they did medleys with country stars. They did Willie. I think they introduced Kathy Tricoli, and the best one they did was with Lori Morgan. And all I can say is it's the perfect blend of the Beach Boys, you know, surf music, which I learned to surf as a kid. After I left Chicago, I went to Bureau Beach, Florida, and then it ties in with country music, and it's just a beautiful song, and it's Americana. So I love it. If anybody's got free time, go and do YouTube and watch the video. It's just really fantastic.
Yeah, the whole album is good. Stars and Stripes, Volume 1, and a lot of different people, like to say, on it. And I was aware of it because a good friend of mine, Henry Strzelecki, who wrote Long Tall Texan, made some money off of it. So that was pretty good, and I picked up a copy. And Willie Nelson sounded good on that, too, which is some doing, and the Beach Boys responsible.
Yeah, and that summer I was working, and I was up to my ears in the music industry, and I couldn't break away and, sit in the back of some of those sessions and look in and do things like that. I just always loved that. The Beach Boys did a great job on that.
They did. They did. And it's really interesting because, as you probably know, Brian Wilson first wanted to do a country album in 1970. And I think he had a working title, Cows in the Pasture. It never got released. And it was sort of a joke. And for years, it was a joke. The guy who was managing him at the time was a big country fan. And so, here it is over 25 years later that they actually do one. And it was the last studio album that had Carl Wilson on it. And it is a good album and not all that well known comparatively.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize country music and the Beach Boys went well together because it's harmonies. There's so much good harmonies in the Beach Boys music and, of course, in country music.
Yeah.
So it's like it was hand in glove. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and so there you go with Lori Morgan, whose name was Loretta Lynn Morgan, and she wasn't named after Loretta Lynn. So at least that's what George said to his dying day. So I don't know, but that's terrific. All right, well, now for our next bumper, and I'll tell you about this now because I want to ask you. You wanted to hear the Dells Stay in My Corner. But there's actually two renditions of that. The first one came out in 65 on VJ, and the second one came out on 68 in Cadet. And they're two different recordings. So which was the one that floated your boat?
I like the 68 because I believe that Johnny Carter's on that one.
Yep.
He wasn't with the Dells in the first one.
Okay. All right. So then it's going to be the 68 version that we will play right after the news. Then we want to get into your current project, which is just fascinating. So all that and more, and I'm hogging Dell, but if you have any questions or comments or would like to get in the action, the number to dial is 888-876-5593. 388-88 Raleigh, right here on WGN Radio.
If you stay, darling. You make me oh so proud. Stay, darling.
Stay in my corner.
To the world I'd cry out how I love you. Honey, I love you. I really love you.
Stay.
Please, please. Stay, darling.
Oh. Stay in my corner.
And I will never let you down. Just say you stay.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, that is, of course, Johnny Carter with that wonderful falsetto and Marvin Jr. lead baritone. And, of course, you could hear Vern Allison and Chuck Barksdale and Mickey McGill. Just a great lineup. Behind the scenes, Jane Jamerson was on bass on that. And the interesting thing is the female voices you're hearing are actually a couple of the Andantes, Motown's house singers, Jackie Hicks and Marlene Barrow. I think Pat Lewis was on that also. And as far as drums, one of them was Maurice White of Earth, Wind & Fire. So good choice. You know, that when that came out in 68, it was interesting because that single was 6 minutes and 11 seconds long. And you loved it.
It's worth every second.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Of course, there had to be a radio edit. You knew that was coming. But even so, you know, just tremendously. And it was Wade Flemons who co-wrote that with Barrett Strong. So it is. It probably was their biggest selling record. In fact, not probably, it was their biggest selling record. But the Dells are one of those groups who've been around since 1950, and there were so many things in the 50s that were woulda, coulda, shouldas that just never got the attention they should have. So it was great in 68 when that came out. So you have a new project. Tell me about it.
Well, I it was inspired by some ill health and an incident that happened. And my editor, publisher, read something that I wrote about my, what I call a not-so-near-death experience.
Yes.
And said, you know, maybe it's time to write a memoir. And honestly, I don't think my life is all about me. it's the people that have touched me, and I've touched them, and, you know, crossed paths. So I decided to write short stories, vignettes, just little bits and pieces about interesting people. Some are famous, some are just only known to me. And that's what I'm doing. I'm working on it. And I shared one. Maybe you wouldn't be embarrassed to know that you're one of them.
That's so nice of you. No, I absolutely appreciate it, and I loved it. Anything you want to say, you say, is fine by me. So I can't wait to read it, because I think that there'll be a lot of people, like you say, some of whom I'll know, some of whom I will not, that I'll get to know through what you're going to write about them. Any intended publication date?
I'm hoping to finish this sometime around January, February, and, you know, if it all works out, it'll be sometime in the spring or, you know, early summer. It all depends.
Right.
I'm a firm believer that, like Charles Bukowski tells writers, you don't try. You just have to let it come.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm about three-quarters of the way through, and, you know, it's every one of the stories is either somebody that's very recognizable, or else there's a very interesting twist and a nice backstory about how I know them or what they've done for me, or, you know, it's all positive stuff except for one.
Ooh.
And, yeah.
Are you willing to reveal that one?
Oh, golly, if I do, am I spoiling? Because
no, I don't know. I don't know. If you don't want to, you don't have to. I'm buying it either way. But
okay. I'll tell you what I do. But privately, I'll send you an email. I'll let you
okay.
know.
Okay, all right. And I promise not to share. I promise not to share it, and that'll be the deal there. But I'm very intrigued. Near-death experience, how near were you?
Well, I had the good fortune or bad fortune. I had a flutter valve for about 4 or 5 days, and I had congestion and all. I went to the emergency room, and I had congestive heart failure. And they worked on me for about a day, and they decided, we're going to move you from ICU down to a regular room. And right as they were about to do that, I was talking to the nurse, and I said, you know, I don't feel good. And then I got a real major heart attack right there while I was sitting on the corner of the bed.
Oh my God.
In the ICU, which was great because, you know, walking right past the door at the time was the head of respiratory therapy, and the nurse grabbed him, and about 5 or 6 people worked on me, and I didn't have to go to the ER or any place. I was on the bed right there in the room, and 11 hours later I was conscious again. And I will share with you privately. I'll send you a copy of what I wrote and what instigated it. But it changed my life, all for the better. I think I've always been spiritually inclined and all, but I'll send it to you, Raleigh. But it's very impactful and powerful. It was enough for a publisher to say, wow, this is the kickstart for why don't you write things like this for things. And to get back to the little vignette about you, you know, we've known each other 20 years.
Yeah.
But we've never physically met face to face. you know, and I think that's a statement about friendship and involvement and touching lives and all. And you know, I've always been a big fan. I'm tickled pink that you're in my life, but I wanted you to be one of the stories I wrote about.
Oh, that's so nice. But, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. I would say most of my close friends I either never met or maybe saw once, twice, three times. For whatever reason, it does seem to be more, you know, more about talking to them on the phone, writing to them, things like that, than face-to-face. So that's not unusual for me. And I feel you're as close a friend as if you were living next door. It just
is. Well, that's nice.
Yeah, but so I got to ask you, might not want to share it completely, but did you have a classic near-death experience? Did you go to the other side?
No, actually, that's why I call it a not-so-near-death.
Okay.
Because if there's a twist to it. When I send it to you, you'll like it. Maybe you'll have me on again. We'll just talk about that.
Okay.
It's very different. That's why I said it's not so near death. It's truly it's a short thing I wrote, but it was so, I don't know. It was real. It was impactful. It was life changing. And my life, I've always had a wonderful, good life. And look at, you know, I've met you and other people and things I've done. But this really turned me, you know, as I'm approaching, you know, the last years of my life. I'm 75 now. I'm not going to last forever. But it really gave a kickstart again to my writing, you know.
That's great.
I'm grateful for it. You know, I really am.
So. Excellent. We're talking to Del Stecher. Yeah. Boardwalk Blues is the book, and I've got a link at Raleigh.net. I suggest you read it. I think you'll like it. I hope you read, but if you do at all, you'll want to read this. And yes, Del and I met because he listened to me on the radio, and radio is important. Bottom line, you know where we're going with this, the Sea Crane Company. If you're a radio fan, then you probably know all about Bob Crane, but somehow if you missed him, many years ago, the 80s, when radio reception was just terrible in the radios that were being sold at the time, Bob said, I can do better than this, and he did. Now, since then, the Sea Crane Company has developed into just not only great products, but a great resource for radio, and the commonality for everything is the radios just have better reception. And, you know, one of them, the CC Radio 2E, which I keep by my bedside, is just tremendous. In fact, I always say the litmus test is take an old radio that barely picks up some distant station, tune in, then put the CC Radio 2E next to it, tune in, and it'll sell itself. But not only will you pick it up, and it's got that twin coil ferrite on AM and great long-range FM reception as well, but great audio quality as well, and you can adjust it however you want. It's got all the bells and whistles and the presets and the clock and the timer, the alarm, the little dial light, all that. But what it really has is the kind of reception that will bring radio listening back to what it was when you loved it. You will again. And it's rarely available at a sale price. But right now, today and tomorrow, it's only through Wednesday, you save $25 if you mention my name. That's Raleigh. You can do it by phone if you want to order by phone. They'll answer all your questions, and they are in the good old USA. 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. But if you can go online, man, go there, ccradio.com, ccradio.com. Take a look at the CC Radio 2E, and I think you'll be as impressed as I am. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
Changing of sunlight to moonlight, reflections of my life. Oh, how they fill my eyes.
The greetings of people in trouble.
Oh, how they fill my eyes.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Marmalade, if you remember that, from the fall of 1969. In the U.S., it came out on London. Top 10 record nationally here, too, Billboard and Cashbox. However, in Ireland, it was number two, and that was Dell's third choice. So why? What about the record?
That was an anthem for we soldiers that served during the Vietnam era, and it's just a wonderful song to reflect upon life and, you know, going home.
Yeah. All right. Well, yes. And you don't hear it much anymore either. That's one of the things, you rarely hear it in regular rotation anywhere. So nice to play that again. Again, a little longer. It was over 4 minutes long. So some of the top 40 stations were like, oh, we got to edit this. But nice stuff. All right. We talked about your near NDE for a moment, but that reminded me, and again, we've talked about this off the air, but you've faced a number of challenges, and it was you who really encouraged us to seek out neuroacupuncture. So tell me about how you happened on that.
Well, about 7-8 years ago, I had a stroke, and there was damage on my left side, and I had a lot of pain in my left foot, tingling and pain in my left hand, and it just wouldn't go away. And my wife read about and suggested, why don't we try acupuncture, which I did. And over a short period of time, I was improved. And I went back a second time, and I got better and better. And just recently, I had another MRI of my brain for another reason, but the original stroke spot is almost impossible for them to find. They're amazed, like, you know, I've healed, and acupuncture works. And in China, if you have any kind of stroke or problem, they put you on acupuncture immediately. But allopathic Western medicine just closes their eyes and ears when it comes to Chinese medicine. But I'm a firm believer in it. And after my heart situation last year, my acupuncturist did some work on me, and my recovery was very quick and complete.
So, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So how long was it between your stroke and when you first tried acupuncture?
About a year.
Okay.
And I would suggest to anybody that, you know, the Chinese, that, like, you know, if you're 10 minutes after your stroke is over, they start on you.
Right.
You know, and as I was telling a friend, you know, the Chinese culture has been there for 4,000 years, and they've been sticking needles in people, and just by trial and error and anecdotal responses, they have kept track of what works.
Well, it is amazing, because we took your advice. It took me 2 years for John, after the stroke, finally said, yes, I'll try it, because the bottom line was, like you say, the pain in the foot, the tingling and all that, it really wasn't abating. And he went, and we've been going now almost a year, and it is different. I mean, I'm looking forward to the point when he can, you know, say, hey, completely don't feel it anymore. We're nowhere near that yet, but it's amazing how well it works.
Yeah, and one of the things that really was amazing was, at one point, my acupuncturist was working on my right lower leg and foot, and I said, what are you doing over there? It's over on the other side. She said, hey, it's all connected. Darn if she wasn't right, because it worked.
Yeah,
so I'm a big advocate for it.
Right,
I really am.
And I don't really see any downside to it, too. If anybody is listening and considering it, I have not heard anything that would cause me to say, "Oh, well, you better watch out for this." You know, probably the worst that happened is you just not improve. But everyone that I've read about has been improved, and it's fascinating to me how well it works. Now, the tingling, yeah, John had that. The pain in your left foot, with John, it feels like he's in a vibe. It's like it's just squeezing nonstop. Did you get that sensation?
I had a little bit of pressure and all that, but every so often what I had was, it was like an electric shock.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's like I just put my toe in a socket or something, and that would happen. And the pain on my left hand was more just a tingling, pins and needles, right. This constant. And that was worse than anything because it was just there all the time.
Right.
You know?
Right, all the time. And, yeah, John has that on the left side. Plus, he also has it on his nose. So, and you're right. For people who don't have this, they don't realize how distracting this can be when it's just constantly there. So that's a great testimony. I didn't want to let you leave without that because hopefully somebody will pick up on that because it really is a miracle, and you're still with us. And in closing, you love music, and I know it. Well, this time of year, every year we vote on the world's worst hit records, and we open the polls on Halloween because it's a night of horrors, and we close them and play the records back, not all of them, on Thanksgiving, a night of turkeys. So with that in mind, if you had to nominate something, what do you hate?
And people are going to be upset with me.
That's okay.
That stupid, that little drummer song thing, the drummer boy thing.
Okay.
I try to go a season without hearing it once because if I do, it's one of those worms in my head. I can't get rid of it. It drives me crazy. I didn't like it when it came out years and years ago. I try to avoid it, but that to me is the worst possible thing to hear at the holidays.
Oh, that's great. The Harry Simeon Chorale. And every time I heard them announce that, I was hoping they'd do Simeon as in apes because I'd like to see that video. But yeah, but you're right. You're not going to escape it somewhere. You'll be in Walmart or something, and there it'll be, whether you want it to be or not. So that's a fine addition to the list. Consider it counted. And yes, I do want to take you up on talking again after I read what you sent. Can't wait to see it, and can't wait to hear more about the next project and everybody who's going to be included. So, Del, thank you for joining us.
Okay. At break time, I just sent you two emails. Go look at them, okay?
I'll do it. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So good deal. Del Stecker, Boardwalk Blues is the latest. If you go to Raleigh.net, there is a link to Amazon. And I would suggest the first thing I did when Del said my book's out, I went and bought it. And great purchase. Loved it. So that's where we'll be next hour. Maybe we'll pick up on more of the world's worst hit records because, of course, the voting only today and tomorrow. Tomorrow night when the show is over, the voting ends. And then I tabulate all day while you're eating your turkeys. And then while the evening progresses, we'll be live, and I always say playing them back, but don't worry, you won't have to hear more than a couple notes of any of them. That would be the absolute worst thing. We ask what your least favorite records are, the things you hate, and then we play them. No, we're not going to do that. All right, so all that and more coming up another 2 hours of this right here on WGN Radio.